draft is in the books, and that means that Green Bay is on the clock. The NFL draft will be in Green Bay next year, but before we turn our attention to that, let's look backwards at what happened in Detroit. And joining us this morning on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy is ESPN's newest draft expert, Field Yates. Can I call you a draft expert, Field? It feels appropriate.
Jen, it's very kind of you to say. If anybody can be a draft expert, I think it might be the one and only Mel Kiper. But, you know, I felt like spending about, 30 hours over the past few days on air with Mel, at least like some of his aura rubbed off on me. So maybe like halfway to being an expert. I'll take that. By the way, you guys all look great this morning. But my guy Gabe with the outstanding Roback hoodie, I mean, that right there is winning the day.
I've heard you're a big fan of him. So am I. It's like my closet is absolutely full of him, Field.
His go-to, for
yeah,
sure.
Smart man.
Trying to get him an endorsement deal hasn't come through yet, but that doesn't mean we'll stop trying.
We'll work on that.
Let's talk about what the Green Bay Packers did this weekend. A lot of the people who evaluate the drafts and try to put grades together just based on name and what the guys have done in college thought very highly of what the Packers did, maybe carried by their first three or four picks. What was your reaction to what Green Bay did this weekend?
Yeah, my general stance on draft grades is that I am going to skew towards the top of the draft, just because while there are several success stories every year of guys, maybe not quite at the level of Puka Nacua, but he was kind of the banner day three pick last year. We know that, you know, most of the all pro level players tend to be drafted in the first 100 or so picks. So Green Bay managed to sort of both fit value and need into the first three rounds of the NFL draft. You know, I felt like Edgerrin Cooper was probably like right on the precipice of being a first round pick, so to land him closer to the middle of the second round and probably filled their biggest need was, to me, a really reasonable piece of business right there by Green Bay. I know there were some fans that were disappointed by bypassing or, I guess, having the Eagles jump them for Cooper DeJean. I thought that Edgerrin Cooper was a very reasonable second round investment for them. And then Jordan Morgan was a guy that I was high on throughout the process. There was a lot to like about what Morgan did during his career at Arizona. You know, coming back this past season, he suffered a torn ACL at the end of the 2022 campaign. You're 300 plus pounds. Like, it takes you, in some cases, more than a full season to get back to where you were prior to the injury. And Jordan Morgan, in week one of last season, did not look like a guy that had suffered an ACL tear some 8 or 9 months before. I thought it was a real credit to him just in terms of the way that he prepared to get back on the field, but also a reminder that this guy's a pretty good athlete. He's maybe not quite as athletic as a couple of the tackles that went right ahead of him, whether it was Tyler Guyton to the Cowboys or whether it was Amarius Mims to the Cincinnati Bengals, but he's ready to play. I believe that. I think Jordan Morgan is ready to play probably sooner than later. He's got some potential guard flexibility despite the fact that he was a tackle in college. Doesn't have super long arms or this massive wingspan like some of the guys that I just mentioned. One of the favorite draft notes that I saw was that Amarius Mims has a 1/4 inch shorter wingspan than Giannis. So some perspective on just how freaky Amarius Mims is. But I thought Jordan Morgan was the most pro-ready of the guys that went in the second half of that offensive tackle class. Tons of experience, played a really fun offense in Arizona, moved around a lot. But I think this guy is ready to go. And obviously the Packers probably have themselves a left tackle competition underway with him and Rashid Walker.
Field, how do you think the rest of the North did? I mean, I'm seeing Chicago's getting some of the highest grades out of all teams in the draft. How do you think? Did they get better?
Yeah, the Bears, I mean, they had one of the best drafts, despite the fact they had just 5 total picks. You know, the reality is when you have 2 picks in the top 10, we should be grading it really high. But things worked out in their favor, specific to the 9th overall pick. Obviously, at number 1, they could do whatever they want. Caleb Williams was my wire-to-wire number 1 prospect. And Jaden Daniels made things fairly interesting, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is certainly outstanding as well. But to me, Caleb continued to remain a cut above. But, you know, the 50-50 proposition, as their GM Ryan Poles told us during day 3 of the broadcast, was whether or not Roma Dunze would be available. The interesting part is that we kind of all thought by the time the draft rolled around that 4 quarterbacks would be gone ahead of Chicago at pick number 9. I just don't think we thought that it would be Mike Penix Jr. going to the Falcons at number 8 that would make quarterback number 4. But Odunze, who was the 6th overall player on my big board, to get him 3 spots later is, you know, a really good value within that top 10. And Chicago kind of came into the draft with 4 primary needs. They needed a quarterback, they needed a wide receiver, an offensive tackle, and they needed an edge rusher. Well, 4 out of their first 5 picks were exactly that, with a punter mixed in as well. So Chicago did well for themselves. You know, the Lions, it was an excellent effort, by the way, by the city of Detroit. And I can't wait to be in Green Bay next year. It pains me to say that I have never been to Lambeau Field before. It's the only NFL city I have never been to before. So I can't wait to change that a year from now. But I thought the Lions had some good day three values, Mekhi Wingo and Giovanni Manu specifically. I thought Chicago probably got the highest mark, but I thought everybody in this class did a pretty good job for themselves.
You mentioned the disappointment of no Cooper DeJean, who is just mocked by just about everybody to go to the Packers. They skip over him. They get Edgerrin Cooper.
Too good to be true.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So then they end up with Javon Bullard as a safety out of Georgia. What can you tell us about Bullard?
Bullard has a ton of big game experience. He's got some versatility as well, and you're going to see him shot out of a cannon. The explosiveness for a safety, which I'm not sure that we talk about explosiveness with safeties all that often, is really, really impressive from Javon Bullard. But I don't know if this is a fair rule to live by or not, but I have adopted this rule, which is that if you can play in the secondary for Kirby Smart, who, of course, has been coaching DBs for much of his coaching career, at least prior to becoming a head coach, and, of course, was one as well. Jen, I know you know that from all your days on the road. That alone makes me think you've got something going on. Like, you have an understanding of instincts. You have an understanding of concepts and schemes. So Javon Bullard, a smart player, versatility as well. I mentioned the big game production. I like guys that did it on the biggest stage. And Georgia, obviously, they're at the point now where they're steamrolling teams left and right. But when they were stressed a little bit, Javon Bullard made some, massive, massive plays for them. A few years ago, against Ohio State in the playoffs, Javon Bullard was the one that actually had that hit on Marvin Harrison Jr. That unfortunately led to Marvin Harrison Jr. Suffering a concussion. But it was obviously, there was no bad intent by Bullard. It's football. But that was an example of him being in the right place, the right time. This safety class was tricky to figure out. There wasn't a clear-cut, obvious number one stand above the rest safety, unless you considered Cooper DeJean a safety. I considered him a corner throughout the process. But Bullard, Cole Bishop, Tyler Newbin, amongst the names that were kind of being bandied about as the likeliest to be the first off the board. So at the end of all three of those guys ended up going within like 13 picks, I think it was, from Newbin to Cole Bishop at number 60. So Bullard right there in that sweet spot of where I expected those top safeties to go.
ESPN's Field Yates joining Jen, Gabe, and Chewy this morning to break down the Packers draft. And so far, he has been high on a number of picks. So I want to talk generally speaking about defense. That was a huge issue for the Packers last year. Obviously, Joe Barry lost his job because for several seasons, that unit had underperformed. They have now dedicated a lot of draft capital. They obviously went out and got a huge player in Xavier McKinney. And you just talked about a lot of these players that they have put there. Is it fair to expect this to be one of the top defenses in the league next season based on who they have and what you think they're capable of accomplishing under Jeff Hafley?
Ooh, good question. Like, top defenses, like maybe like not one of the first five or six, Jen, but I think this is they have a chance to be a dramatically improved defense, not just because of some of the reinforcements that they made on the roster this offseason. McKinney, who I thought, I know that people will talk all the time about how there is so much fool's gold in free agency. We see deals that end up blowing up in teams' faces rather rapidly. But I thought Xavier McKinney was one of the rare true blue free agents available, where it was more about the circumstance than it was the player. And he hit the open market. The Giants were tight to the cap. They had over the last year plus dealt with Daniel Jones contract, the Saquon Barkley franchise tag, and they were sort of doing the dance there with Saquon and trying to keep some of the powder dry to potentially retain him. But McKinney, I thought, was about as clean as it got, along with Christian Wilkins, in terms of free agents who hit the open market and deserved that huge contract. But Jeff Hafley should make a massive, massive difference. Jeff Hafley, of course, coming over from Boston College, and the scheme for Hafley is going to involve a ton of man-to-man. It's going to involve a ton of pressures that quarterbacks don't see coming. So you got to have guys that can cover. You got to have guys that can rush, which is why, while I wasn't expecting the Packers to use a premium pick on an edge rusher, given obviously the restructure and return of Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary and last year's first-round pick, Lucas Van Ness, if something had worked out in which one of those top rushers, whether it was a Jared Verse or Leiatu Latu, had fallen to 25, it wouldn't have totally stunned me if they just said, well, this guy's just too good to ignore. Let's take him. So maybe I was like a little surprised that the Packers waited until the seventh round to address the cornerback spot for some extra depth. But I do think Jeff Hafley's presence alone does make this defense a whole lot better.
What are your thoughts on Marshawn Lloyd, the running back out of USC?
I thought there were three that were in the mix for being the best in this year's class. Lloyd plus Jonathan Brooks, who ended up being the first running back taken. And then also Trey Benson from Florida State, who was the second running back taken. It was kind of a, what style are you looking for? I thought Jonathan Brooks had some shades of Aaron Jones as a just sort of as a reference point. But coming off of a torn ACL suffered on November 11th, I think he'll be ready for the start of the season. Sounds like he will be. He might even be ready for the start of training camp, but obviously that's something to factor into the equation. Trey Benson was kind of the forced tackle-making speed demon from Florida State, ran 4.39 at the 40. Marshawn Lloyd was the explosive, unafraid, do some work in the passing game as well, played his best football by far of his college career this past year at USC. He spent the first 3 years of his career, I guess, at the other USC, South Carolina. A fun player to watch. I have no issue with like where he went. I would say that I was surprised only because of the Josh Jacobs signing. I didn't think the Packers would be in the market for a running back in the first three rounds.
But, Chewy's been all over that field, just so you know. Chewy's been all over them. Yeah. The entire time leading up to the draft, he kept saying, every time we were like, cornerback, offensive line, linebacker. Yeah. Chewy's like, and don't forget running back.
I don't think A.J. Dillon's the answer here. He's been given more than enough time to prove himself and just hasn't done it.
Yeah, BC, and a one-year deal.
And that's BC on BC crime.
Yeah, so that hurts.
I know. I was going to say, Chewy. Yeah, I know. That one does. Yeah, as the husband of a BC grad, that one kind of hit my soul a little bit right there as well. But yeah, you're probably, you know what? It's probably a good reminder, and I need to, I should be as aware of this as anybody, is that any NFL scouting department will tell you the draft is not just about the year in which you are in, it's about the years ahead. So Marshawn Lloyd might be a guy who makes his presence felt a lot more in 2025 and 2026 than he will in 2024, because it would surprise none of us, I would think, if Josh Jacobs, provided he stays healthy, is amongst the NFL's leaders in total touches next season. I like the player a lot, though. Again, I should have studied the depth chart a little bit stronger during the pre-draft process and said to myself, you know, Chewy's up to something.
You know, Chewy's like a broken clock field. That's all you got to know. Okay, go ahead, Gabe.
Fair enough.
Where do you think the Packers, because they didn't need a lot of wide receivers, tight ends, and you mentioned Rome Odunze and how he ends up in Chicago. The Lions obviously make a big investment right before the draft, announcing the Amon-Ra St. Brown contract. We batted this around on Friday. Where do you think the Packers' skill position group ranks within the NFC North?
Ooh, that's a good question, given, oh, man. All right. So I'll use Rome Odunze as sort of an analogy here, because somebody had to be the third ranked receiver in this year's draft class. But if you had asked me whether Rome Odunze was the best receiver in many of the most recent draft classes, I would have said yes. He ended up being my third ranked receiver and was the third taken in this year's class. And but still, like, so I kind of feel like that's what I'm sort of wondering right now, is that the Packers may be third or fourth in total skill group spots. I mean, I can make an argument for them first too, right? Like, I don't know that anybody screams to me as like clearly the best. What I will say is that the Packers got the most out of the most number of guys last year, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe when fully healthy, the accolades of Justin Jefferson and TJ Hawkinson are the most impressive when you factor in the full body of work. Gosh, I'm like talking myself into a filibuster, though, because I don't have a clear answer. the reality is none of them have a deficiency, right? Like, there are teams around the NFL right now where you're saying to yourself, that skill group is not good enough to line up and win. But, you know, the Jordan Love breakout last year was by far the most important thing that the Packers had happened to or for them, and they get a lot of credit for that, obviously. And Goody's been on a heater for like 24 straight months now, it feels like, when you look back at some of the moves that he has made. This is one of those skill groups that also, like, this maybe the second most important thing was just how fast everything happened for them last season, right? I mean, guys who are 20, 21 years old, 22 years old are making a mark seemingly out of nowhere, and guys were called upon that weren't making, you know, whether it was Tucker Kraft late in the season after – you know, whether it was the early run for, I guess, I feel like Jaden Reed also fits in that category. I was going to say he was on the early heater as well. But between Jaden and Tucker's emergence late, I guess maybe Luke Musgrave was earlier in the season, a little more, productive at the tight end spot. The bottom line is this. They made an absolute masterclass out of the 2023 NFL draft. And these kids are all, like, still kids. Like, we actually call them that. So the Packers may have the best skill group in the NFC North. They may not, but none of them have a weakness. That put my brain into a pretzel right there. Thanks, Keith.
Yeah, well, we were just debating if they went from being first to worst.
I was trying to do math on the fly.
Yeah, no, but I think it's fair because they have all the other teams field have a bona fide wide receiver one. The Packers just don't. Okay, and we were saying that there's a value there, isn't there?
Not yet.
That's fair. Okay, that's fair. But if you turn the question around and said, where do they rank 1 through 32? They're still not they're not that low, right? So they could be fourth in the NFC North, but they could be 12th overall, and that's still really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd have to think about this much more critically. My good friend and colleague here at ESPN, Bill Barnwell, does skill group rankings every year. I think that comes out during the summer. So I'll be curious to see how Bill sees it. But yeah, it's not like it's a deficiency. I don't sit there and say right now, the Packers don't have enough for Jordan Love to work with and line up and score a bunch of points tomorrow.
No, we feel similarly. Field, it has been fantastic watching you grow into that role that they have you doing on the draft coverage. I am so, so happy for you. And we really appreciate you taking out some time out of your morning this morning to join Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Glad to do it. By the way, Jen, they put me in your Mercedes van for a little second. It was awesome. They were like, Jen did a markedly better job with the interviews than you did, but I got just a little glimpse of what it was like to be Jen Latta for a minute.
First of all, is that or is that not the coolest spot to tape a podcast?
I mean, I was asking if I could drive it home. They almost let Kuiper drive it home.
You're like,
Jen's got a park to her driveway now.
I got a couple of kids now. We could really use the space. We're going to have sporting events rolling down the lane here. When Shefty was on with us last week, he said the same thing. He goes, I was in your van. I told these guys, it's not my van.
Have you gotten a ticket in the van yet or no?
As far as Mercedes is concerned, it is your van.
I have a very bad driving record, so you guys are telling me. Don't drive the van. They kept saying that. They're like, whatever you do, don't drive the van. Just sit in it and ask questions. Then everybody should be safe. Field, have a great one, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. See you guys. Talk to you. Yep.
He's Field Yates. You saw him all weekend long on ESPN's draft coverage. You'll see him continuing to crunch those numbers, check rosters, and he does a fantastic job at it. We are very lucky to have him this morning. All right. Killed the clock. No big deal. We'll take a break. Be right back after this on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.